Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Al Behar. Welcome, Al.
Thank you, Wayne.
Welcome to the show. Al is Vice President and Senior Private Client Fiduciary Advisor. That's a lot. That's a mouthful. At Wilmington Trust, and you know, I've known Al for many years, but Wilmington Trust is a relatively new gig for you, right?
Moved over about almost 2 years ago now. Although the firm actually has been around for quite a while. Wilmington Trust, as a company, started I guess about 100 years ago, and really started out as the family office for the DuPont family.
Is that right? I didn't realize that. Yeah,
it's sort of interesting, and it's kind of grown out of that, and it's really grown into over the past 100 years or so one of the country's premier wealth management type firms. So we've now got offices and up and down the East Coast and all the places you'd expect: Boston, New York, Philly, Wilmington, of course, Baltimore, D.C., Atlanta, several offices in Florida, and now in California as well.
Oh boy, you've made the trek across the country.
So
what does the firm do? What do you do exactly?
Well, it's relative to some of our competitors in the wealth management space. It's relatively small, but has a great range of sophisticated services. I'd say the four core pieces of what we do revolve around obviously managing money. So investment management is one core service, but you really can't do that without providing some fairly sophisticated financial planning type services by way of cash flow planning, mm-hmm. estate planning, the tax analysis, and the like. A whole range of fiduciary services. So we'll serve as trustee on pretty much any sort of trust that might be out there. And then, for lack of a better word, one of the other things that we're very big on is something called family governance, and that really revolves around educating families about what has been set up, how it works, and how to keep it working over the generations.
You know, that's a valuable service. I think more and more of my clients are focusing on that. In the past, I'd say, you know, 20, 25 years ago, it wasn't that big of a deal, or at least people were not focusing on it. Today, particularly in high net worth families, it is a very, very high area of focus. What do you teach them? I mean, what types of things do you bring to the table in terms of establishing a family governance structure, if you will?
Well, what most families don't realize is that wealth doesn't get dissipated from poor planning or poor investments. I mean, that happens every once in a while.
Right.
But far more common is starting in generation 2, 3, and 4, you get more and more people that are now part of this wealth. And what flows out of that naturally are differences of opinion, for lack
sure.
of a better word, disagreements. And that really is what ends up sinking wealth. And there's this phenomenon called shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves, where from generation 1 to generation 4, the wealth is created, built up, and then sort of dissipated,
right.
And generally involves around governance issues. And so we believe in doing a lot of family education, and also making sure that what we call conflict-free structures are set up for the family to enable that wealth to continue.
How are you structured to serve your clients today?
We're team-based, so it's not one person, but we've got five people on our team here in D.C., as well as a whole group of assistants. But we're really set up so that each discipline is represented. So we have two financial planners on our team. One does basic cash flow analysis and things like that, and then we have another high-level planner who does a lot of business succession and high-end estate planning. There is a fiduciary. I'm the fiduciary person, so we do a lot of trust management and trust administration and advice.
Right.
There is a portfolio manager for investment purposes, and then there is a private banker on the team for banking services and really how to effectively use credit as part of the financial plan.
Now, one of the things we didn't mention is the relationship of Wilmington Trust to M&T. So does that facilitate
yes.
the banking relationship more than ever before?
It does. Actually, it's been great. M&T bought Wilmington Trust about maybe 2.5 years ago, and it's really been a great fit for a couple of reasons. One, it gives us access to the whole suite of services that they provide on the banking side, but they also have a whole range of really, really terrific business clients, business owners, and that has been a great fit for us as well.
Okay, what are some of the big challenges that you're facing in business today?
You know, there's probably two main challenges to what we do and for clients. One is we're in a volatile investment environment. We've been like that probably since the late 90s. We've been through several crashes, you know, the most recent of which in 2008 has right. certainly been the worst in our lifetime. And you add to that a changeable tax environment that, you know, Congress now tells us is sort of permanent, but somebody said it's permanent until it's not permanent.
That's until the tax reform debate begins
right.
in August.
So we kind of have to deal with all of that. It's a permanent part of our environment. It's not going to go away.
So change is permanent. That's the one thing that is permanent.
Change is permanent, and that's, you know, and that's what really worries clients.
You
know, clients are very concerned with volatility in the investment world, volatility in the tax world. You know, the two biggest questions we get from the clients are, how much is enough? They're trying to quantify that, and that's a moving target, and it's
sure.
and it's as much art as it is science, and it's also helping them avoid the impact of another crash like we saw in 2008. And that's really, those are the two biggest things by far that we see on a regular basis.
Yeah, I run into it in my practice as well. The how much is enough piece of it is a really scary one, because we just don't know what is going to happen in the future vis-a-vis inflation. So if, you know, if inflation hits, interest rates go up, things change are going to change in terms of your modeling, I would imagine.
Well, we revisit our projections at least twice a year. So when we sit down initially with a family to go through a lot of that information, we want to make sure that our assumptions are correct, and it's something that we need to look at over and over and over again, particularly in a volatile environment.
One of the things that you mentioned was that, you know, people are worried about if they're going to have enough at the end, but then they're also worried about the volatility of their investments. How do you all effectively manage investment risk?
You need to do that at all phases of the relationship. So it's particularly important up front to look at things like time horizon, get a handle on risk tolerance. And sometimes that's a little bit trickier than it sounds.
Why? Why is it trickier? What
makes
it trickier?
Because people will say that they are willing to take risk, but then sometimes it turns out that they really aren't, but they want high returns regardless of that.
Right.
Regardless of that. So you really have to quantify that. And for the average, you know, we as investment managers, we look at something called standard deviation. For the average client, their definition of risk is, how much money can I lose in this thing? And that's
a great way of quantifying
really
it or articulating it.
So, but the other side of the coin is you have to look at spending patterns and spending needs and make sure that the two are married up, and you run projections and you run worst case scenarios, make sure that there's no gap between their goals and ultimately what they can spend and what they want to have for themselves and the succeeding generations. You have a written investment policy statement that's put in place. So there's a roadmap for everything that you do. And then it's just like real estate, where people say, you know, what are the three most important things? Location, location, location.
Mm-hmm.
With investments, it's diversify, diversify, diversify.
Still, that's still the mantra.
Yes, it is. And that will never change. And it's more than just having, you know, 20 stocks in the S&P and a few bonds as diversification. It's looking at multiple asset classes, involving multiple styles, involving multiple managers, so not everything is correlated to go up and down together.
How do you, I imagine that you're having to meet with these clients periodically, sometimes four times a year, maybe two times a year, maybe others one time a year. It depends on what they're up to. How do you factor in the changes in the economy, factor in the changes in the investment world in terms of doing their financial planning? That sounds to be very, very difficult to do.
You have to constantly check that your basic assumptions are right, you know, recheck the numbers, and then rerun things at least a couple of times a year to say, are we still on track? Can we still do this? Can we live like this? And give people some comfort and be able to quantify that to some degree, to say, yes, we can maintain lifestyle. And every once in a while, there are some gaps where folks have a lifestyle they want to maintain, but the asset base may or may not be there, and it's our job to tell them that.
Have you ever had a client, and I've had this happen, you know, not because I don't do financial advisory work, but I've seen it happen. A client come in and say, you know, this is how I want to invest my portfolio, and then all of a sudden they start spending it a lot faster than you had planned with them, and they are in trouble. Have you ever seen that happen where the client actually spends more than they have?
It does happen, you know, and frankly, the more common scenario is the opposite one, where their in savings has been so ingrained in their psyche for so many years, they have trouble loosening the purse strings. But sometimes it is the opposite issue, and that's why it's important to revisit those assumptions on a frequent basis.
Now, the Tax Reform Act was enacted effectively on January the 1st, signed by the president on January the 3rd. There were a lot of changes made. It certainly didn't simplify the Internal Revenue Code, and that's why I say I think we're going to see tax reform revisited later this year or next year. How has it affected your planning for your clients?
Well, you know, the Tax Act did have a lot of changes, but it was also very notable for what it didn't change. And one of the things we were expecting was a change in the exemption against federal estate taxes.
That was a shocker.
It was unbelievable. And so the rate jumped up from 35 to 40%, but they left the gift and estate tax schedules together, and a lot of the other planning tools were left intact. So the fact of the matter is that 97% of the families out there don't have to worry about federal estate taxes right now and probably never will. But what we are counseling clients on is to make sure that the basic blocking and tackling is in place. Make sure that the wills, the revocable trusts accurately reflect goals. Make sure that powers of attorney, healthcare powers, and living wills are all been updated and accurately reflect what folks want to do. If they have irrevocable trusts that have been put in place in the past, let's take a look at those, make sure they still meet needs, because sometimes those trust structures can be merged into other trusts.
That's right.
Or even terminated if they're no longer needed. And then finally, we also want to look very closely at the other things that people set up, like family limited partnerships, LLCs, and the like. And we're going to revisit the non-tax reasons those structures were set up, because more often than not, there were tax reasons for them being set up. So, but that does not mean they should now be dismantled, because there were lots of reasons why they should, particularly with regard to protecting assets for future generations. You know, one thing I say is, you know, we have a marital deduction, we have an exemption against federal estate taxes. There's no exemption against divorce.
That's right.
And so you
or
need
creditors.
To protect. Or creditors.
I mean, these vehicles, irrevocable trusts, family limited partnerships, and LLCs, are truly valuable asset protection devices. And if they're operated properly and in accordance with the formalities that the law requires, can be very effective protections against creditor attacks for your beneficiaries, for your family, as well as for yourself going forward. So we are still doing estate planning. Oh, and by the way, the fact that the exemptions are now $5.25 million for gift and estate and generation skipping transfer tax means that there still is a lot of planning available too, right? We're able to use valuation discounting. We're able to set up a little bit more aggressive structures that are available for people who are of high net worth.
All of those things, as you point out, Wayne, are still in place. And for wealthier families, frankly, there's been no change in the importance and the value of the planning that they need to do.
Now, the last question I had for you today, Al, was what questions should somebody ask if they're interviewing an advisor or a wealth manager today?
We have a number of questions that we like people to ask, and if they don't ask them, we'll tell them. So, you know, first and foremost is the wealth manager you're speaking with a fiduciary?
Mm-hmm.
And what that means, plain and simple, is are they sitting on the same side of the table as you when it comes to giving advice and working with your family? And that's a very high standard to achieve. Second, and related to that, is how is the firm and the advisor compensated? You should know, is it fee-based compensation? Is it commission-based? And I'm not suggesting that commission-based compensation is always not good or better or worse, but just be aware of how your advisor is being compensated. You want to know, what is a typical client for that advisor look like? Where do you fit in? You know, are you a small fish in a big pond, a big fish in a small pond? How much attention are you going to get? How is the advisor's team structured, if there is one? So if it's one person that you're dealing with, you should know that. If it's a team, how is that person integrated with the rest of the team? what are the credentials of the team? You know, what sort of checks and balances are in place, and are there other services available?
These are great questions. We're talking with Al Behar, Vice President, Senior Client, Private Client Fiduciary Advisor at Wilmington Trust. Al, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Phone number 202-434-7013, and email address is abehar@wilmingtontrust.com.
Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great week.